Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hi there, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, and we are not live today. It's not a holiday, but it kind of is. It's the first official day of fall, but Dr. Umat and Dr. Mixon both gone for the weekend, so we recorded some things for you, some fresh ideas, some new information for you, and we're featuring some of our favorite phone calls for you as well this week. We'll be live back in the studio next week. All right, start off the show, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Umat, discussing something very important as we're aging, right?
So, Jerry, it's so nice to be back here after a little bit of a break on Saturdays. And this is a pre-recorded show, it's always nice to chat with you about what we do. And I know I look forward to my interaction with you just because I bring you what I hear the patient saying, and then you tell me what you're reading in the research, and then we both go to conferences, and we both put our thoughts together, and we come up with programs that'll help our patients in the long haul.
That's the idea.
But, you know, one of the things that is a foundation of our program has been how to help people in menopausal and andropausal stages, particularly what is happening to a woman as her hormone levels are declining.
Okay. Well, let's start with what usually happens.
Okay.
Usually the lady notices that she's having some night sweats,
mm-hmm,
or some mood swings, or her husband is a little unhappy because her sex drive has faded away.
Or she's unhappy because her sex drive has faded
away. Or she's unhappy because her vagina hurts when she has intercourse.
That's right. That's why she's avoiding it.
Takes the fun out of it when it hurts.
For sure.
So she goes to her family doctor.
Uh-huh.
And statistically, she has a 40% chance that she's going to be diagnosed with depression.
I know. That is a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
And they talked about it at the North American Menopause Society, and they advocate for antidepressants.
Which is just crazy.
It is just such a pet peeve of mine.
I know, because it is not a Prozac deficiency.
It is not. Her brain is not deficient in Prozac or any antidepressant,
That's right. All of the antidepressants, in fact, help her to gain weight.
That's right.
And kill what's left of her sex drive.
Sure. And
so,
cloud her thinking, yeah, make
so
her sadder.
All she really wants to do is gain an extra 10 pounds and have even less interest in sex. I mean, maybe the 10 pounds will make the hubby not pay attention anymore, but, you know.
Well, she might. No, anyway, no. That's not fair.
In the average menopausal woman, it would be better to lose the 10 than to gain another 10. Okay.
Just because. Indeed, because we all have, you know, until I entered menopausal age, I would only imagine what that muffin top meant. Everybody has it, but it's like, okay, why can you not avoid it? Ask me now, and I have a different story to tell you.
That's right. Well, of course, mine is gone. But I am neither menopausal nor andropausal.
Thank God for that.
So, yes. I'm a child of 76.
That's right. So just a mere baby.
It's my second childhood.
That's right.
And I'm enjoying it. Now when I throw a tantrum and suck my thumb, people say, don't pay attention. He's old.
So, Do you suck your thumb?
No.
Okay, thank you. You just have tantrums. Okay.
And actually, when the boss throws a tantrum, everybody runs.
Everybody goes away, yeah. Nobody wants to be a part of that.
You got it. No, here's the problem. Okay. It is true that menopause and andropause, and by the way, for those of you that aren't cognizant of this, andropause is the male version of menopause.
Okay. Imagine that. Men have a pause, too.
We have a pause, too. Our pause usually comes a few years later than the woman's, about 5 or 6 years, but it's there. And we're going to today chat about both of those pauses.
Let's do it.
And how to overcome the pause and get things moving again.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's understandable if you look at the symptom complexes that go with depression and that go with menopause and that go with andropause, the symptoms are almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
In depression, real clinical depression, what you get is a persistent lack of joy and enjoyment in things that used to be pleasurable.
Yeah.
And there's, with that, a concomitant feeling of sadness, as though something has been lost, mm-hmm. and people just can't get that up. That is the clinical definition of depression.
That's right.
Okay. Well, what happens when a woman finds that she keeps putting on more and more pounds?
Mm-hmm.
She can't have intercourse because her vagina hurts,
mm-hmm.
and she's dry. Her libido has faded away anyway. She's waking up four or five times every night having night sweats.
Mm-hmm.
She's having hot flashes. She's getting dizzy from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
She's getting intermittent palpitations.
Mm-hmm. Foggy thinking, food cravings,
yes.
feelings of sadness, crying without any reason.
Yes. You know, and you put all that together and you say, well, yeah, that woman looks like she's depressed.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So the family physician who's, you know, understanding of this is relatively rudimentary says, well, this woman's clearly depressed. Let's get her on an antidepressant. And 4 out of 10 times, a prescription for antidepressant is written for this woman.
Right. So they would be right based on their clinical evaluation of the patient. However, if they delved into her hormonal issues and realized what was happening, which is, by the way, considered to be normal aging, they would have the option of, can I help change the trajectory of her hormonal milieu and therefore help treat her symptoms, or should I just give her a prescription? And the easiest thing to do is just to give a prescription of an antidepressant, which will then help her sleep a little bit better. Her mood might be more evened out, but it does not address the underlying problem that she is experiencing. Because she is still going to deplete her hormones, her memory is still going to get poorer, her bones are going to get thinner, her skin is going to get saggier, her mood is going to be depressed, she's still going to have hot flashes, she's still going to experience all of the changes that are happening because her hormone levels are decreasing.
Yes. And here's where it's going to get even more complicated. It's not just a matter of estrogen decline. And,
yeah.
and that is the mistake that is getting made. If she goes to a gynecologist instead of her family doctor, he's going to think, oh, it's estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to look at his clinic protocol. And the protocol is going to say, if she's having flashes and mood swings, you can put her on estrogens at the lowest dose possible for the shortest time period, and you try not to stay more than 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's some problems with that. First of all, it's not all being caused by estrogen. In fact, very little of that is caused by estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Even the stopping periods is not caused by estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So here's where we start. And at Longevity Medical Clinic, we will check all of the things I'm about to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, we're going to look at your thyroid level. It turns out that by the time a woman hits menopause, her thyroid function is about 25% lower than it was at her peak.
Mm-hmm.
It's still within the, quote, normal range because it's normal for for thyroid to decline in 50-year-old women. Mm-hmm. So it's fine for a 50-year-old, but it sucks compared to when she was 20 and enthusiastic.
Sure. Absolutely.
So what are the signs and symptoms of low thyroid? Weight gain, mm-hmm. dry skin, mm-hmm. dry hair.
Hair loss.
Menstrual irregularities, fatigue, mm-hmm. sleep disorders, mm-hmm. and depression.
There we go. Okay, depression.
So
that's a common friend, right?
That's a common friend. So just that first one that's now down 25% from its peak can give her essentially all of the symptoms that the gynecologist is going to try to treat with estrogen, and we're just talking about thyroid.
Right.
Okay. The next one that's going to be going down is indeed her estrogen. Her estrogen, though, is only going to be down about 50% from where it was at her peak. Mm-hmm. She's still got half her estrogen. That's what people don't realize. But as the estrogen declines, what are the symptoms? Foggy brain.
Mm-hmm.
Difficulty with word choices and, you know, those kind of pauses. You can't find the word you're looking for.
Yeah.
Short-term memory goes, sleep disorders, skin is getting dry,
uh-huh.
periods are getting irregular. Oh, and she's shifting her metabolism towards weight gain
and depression.
So, okay, now if she gets estrogen, she may get some help from the depression because they've treated one of the two hormones that we now know are causing the problem.
Right.
But then the next one. Progesterone is now down 65 to 70% below its peak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the lack of progesterone is why her period stopped.
Correct.
Her period didn't stop because estrogen was low. It was only down by half. But this 65 to 70% decline in progesterone meant that her uterus never got primed enough to have a period. And so what are the symptoms of low progesterone? Sleep disorders.
Mm-hmm. Big one.
Increased appetite.
Mm-hmm.
Muffin tops.
Yep. Weight gain.
Weight gain.
Cravings.
But specifically, the low progesterone starts shifting your metabolism to putting fat on your belly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anxiety.
Anxiety and...
crying.
Oh, yes. Weepy. They get weepy as all get out. In fact, PMSing.
Mm-hmm.
Think of all the PMS symptoms you've ever heard of. What do you think, Mr. and Mrs. Audience, causes PMS? About 10 days to 2 weeks before your period is due, you get a peak of progesterone. And then the progesterone levels drop suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that sudden drop in progesterone that causes PMS.
Right.
So now, with a menopausal woman, mm-hmm. you've got a long-term PMS state. All of those symptoms that go with PMS are now your daily fare for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's sad.
That is sad, yes. Because now you got a permanent PMS.
Right.
And that's not treated with anything except progesterone.
Correct. Not a synthetic progestin, by the way.
No.
Totally different thing. Yeah.
Synthetic progestins like Provera increase the risk of breast cancer by 67%, and real progesterone increases it by zero.
That's okay. Right. In fact, estrogen does not play a role here like we thought from the Women's Health Initiative study.
Yeah, we might cover that a little later.
Let's do that.
That's another one that I'd like to kind of talk about. But yeah, so now we've got
thyroid estrogen, progesterone.
Oh, what's the next one that's down? Testosterone, which is a woman's primary hormone in her youth, by the way. An 18 or 20-year-old girl at her peak has 2.5 to 3 times more testosterone in her bloodstream than she has estrogen.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So now the testosterone that is her primary hormone, the one that gives her strength and self-confidence and stress tolerance and, you know, endurance and cheerfulness, is down by 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the symptoms of low testosterone? Depression is number one,
mm-hmm.
fatigue, muscle weakness, sleep disorders.
Lack of self-confidence,
increased anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, and osteoporosis, thinning of your bones.
That's with estrogen and testosterone.
Right, but the estrogen helps to keep the bones from thinning. The testosterone helps you to make new bone. And when you're losing the capacity to make new bone and replace old worn bone, you start getting thinning.
Right.
So her depression is now caused by thyroid,
estrogen,
progesterone,
and testosterone,
and DHEA.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Okay. Dehydroepiandrosterone, which is an adrenal steroid made by her adrenal glands. And that one is down 70 to 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the symptoms of low DHEA? You've heard the list. Fatigue, lethargy, dry skin, loss of muscle, thinning bones, depression.
There you go. That's right.
And low libido.
Yeah.
Okay. So you now got five separate hormones, all of which can cause the entire complex.
Right.
And then we get to pregnenolone.
Mm-hmm.
Pregnenolone, again, is an adrenal steroid, but it's made by both ovaries and adrenals. And the pregnenolone is the substrate to make all of those other hormones.
Yep. Mother hormone.
That's right. And pregnenolone, which in her peak was probably up around 250 or 300, is now down around 25 or 30. It's down 90%+. And with the low pregnenolone, she can't make any of those other hormones worth a hoot because they're all made out of pregnenolone. And so there is another source of all of her other symptoms.
Yeah.
And the pregnenolone is a potent anti-inflammatory and helps to suppress arthritic pain, autoimmune diseases, pain, muscle weakness, etc. So when you're going through menopause, you've got a lack of six different hormones, all of which can cause virtually every symptom you got.
That's right.
And none of those things are an antidepressant.
Yep.
And estrogen is 1/6 of the solution.
Yeah.
So ladies and husbands of ladies out there, you need to recognize that if your wife, lover, friends are getting treated with just estrogen or being treated with something trying to keep her off estrogens, they're making a serious mistake.
Yeah.
You're only going to treat this person properly by measuring and replacing six different deficient hormones.
That's right. That's great. Thank you, Dr. Mixon.
So we got to take a little break, but we're going to be back. You know, I think I was going to talk about andropause next, but let's do a little touch on estrogen and breast cancer just for fun.
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
All right.
Okay.
If the devil danced in empty pockets.
Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette Morgan. So glad to have you along, and thank you for joining us. Do want to let you know, today is a pre-recorded show, so we won't be taking any live phone calls, but we are going to feature some of our favorite phone calls from this year. So stay tuned for lots of information, perhaps that you missed prior in our other shows. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and it's brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics.
Welcome back, everybody. We've had our little commercial break so we can stay on the air. Now,
somebody has to pay the bills.
Somebody has to pay the bills, and it's the people listening to this radio show. Because if they don't pay the bills, well, we go off the air. So, let's not go off the air. I've enjoyed this show for 25 years, and I hope to continue it another 25 years.
Sounds like a good plan to me, sir.
That's right. You know, you're going to get you out of your teens and ready to retire.
I know, right? Yeah. Time for me to grow up.
That's right. Well, you know, I figure I'm in my second childhood. I may grow up by then. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll make an effort.
That's right. Well, I don't know. It's too much trouble.
Too much trouble.
I'm having way too much fun.
You are.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I think the amount of fun I have in my life, yeah, if the politicians could, they make it illegal. They just would.
Yeah.
I don't think they want anybody happy and smiling.
Let's not tell them about it then.
That's right. You got it. They already tax it.
Okay,
let's talk about estrogen. We had a caller a few weeks ago who said her oncologist told her that estrogen caused breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if the oncologist was fibbing in an effort to get her to go on her estrogen blocker.
Blockers, okay.
Which, by the way, I think she may well benefit from because, yeah. But we'll get to that later. Or if she honestly believes that foolishness.
Mm.
2001, there was a study called the Women's Health Initiative Study, and it looked at 60-some thousand women for about, I forget how many years, 5 or 6 years or some such thing. And they stopped the study early because they found that the women that were on the particular form of hormone replacement therapy they were giving them, which was Provera with equine estrogens, horse estrogens, and Provera, had a 27% increased risk of breast cancer.
That's right.
And so headlines all over the country said, hormone replacement therapy causes breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And prescriptions for estrogen dropped like a stone.
Yeah.
Now, you'd expect that if the estrogen were causing breast cancer, stopping estrogens all over the country would result in a decline in breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was breast cancer started to rise.
Mm.
It didn't go down when they stopped writing estrogen. It started going up.
Hmm.
And doctors are kind of scratching their head. We say, wait a minute. We thought this estrogen caused the breast cancer.
Right.
And we stopped writing it. And now women are getting more breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Europeans did a European three-nation study. Now, in Europe, they had a lot more variety in the types of synthetic progestins they used. In America, we basically only used one. Provera, medroxyprogesterone acetate.
Mm-hmm.
But in Europe, they had like six different ones they were using. And they found that most of the synthetic progestogens increased the risk of breast cancer. The women that were on estrogens alone were not getting an increased risk of breast cancer. In fact, it looked like their risk of breast cancer was going down, not up.
That's right.
And the one that we were using, the Provera, medroxyprogesterone acetate, they found in Europe that it increased the risk of breast cancer by 67%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because of that, Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, right over here in Seattle, mm-hmm. went back to the data from that original study, and they said, now, wait a second. We got 60-some thousand women here. Some of them had had hysterectomies. Other had had other reasons not to put them on a progestin. So let's take a look at the ones that were just on estrogen
mm-hmm.
without the synthetic progestogen. And they got a real rude awakening because what they found was the women who only had estrogen
mm-hmm.
had 25% less breast cancer than the women that got, or they got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 25% reduction in breast cancer occurrence in women that went on estrogens alone mm-hmm. with no synthetic progestogen.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other surprises in that.
Mm.
When they reassessed it, they found that heart attacks mm. went down 40%.
Mm-hmm.
Estrogen reduced breast cancer by 25% and heart attacks by 40%.
Mm-hmm.
It lowered the risk of colon cancer
right.
by 42%.
That was huge, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so
fracture risk decreased too.
Fracture risk decreased and
yeah.
all-cause mortality, that is death from any cause, went down
yeah.
because it turns out estrogen is a potent anti-inflammatory yeah. for your entire brain and body.
The only thing that increased was a slight increase in risk for stroke due to oral estrogen.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
So it turns out that when you gave women estrogen, you saved an enormous number of lives.
That's right.
Heart attacks went down, colon cancer went down, breast cancer went down, fractures went down.
That's right. And all-cause mortality went down.
Went down. And so there was no indication whatsoever that estrogen caused the breast cancer. In fact, estrogen helped prevent the breast cancer. Now,
that's right.
Let's complicate the picture a little bit more.
Okay.
All right.
This is a nice story.
Okay. Well, it turns out that breast cancer is a relatively slow-growing critter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it starts with one cell that mutates. And at the end of its reproductive lifespan, that cell doubles, and then it doubles again and doubles again and doubles again and keeps doubling until the tumor gets big enough that we can find it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But here's the thing. The average woman has had breast cancer for 5 years before it's big enough for us to find it.
Mm.
It needs to be about 1 centimeter mm-hmm. in size. That is about 0.4% of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be about a centimeter in size before we can find it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's smaller than that, she has her mammogram, she has her breast exams, and nobody finds anything wrong, and she thinks she's perfectly healthy. But the reality is, by the time the diagnosis is made, that tumor has been growing for 5 years.
Right.
And if it's one of the more indolent tumors that grows more slowly,
yeah,
it could have been there for 10 years.
Sure.
Okay. Now, what do you think happens when you got a woman, she's got an early breast cancer that we don't know about yet,
mm-hmm.
and we put her on estrogens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the common thing would be, oh, my God, you must speed up its growth. Well, actually, it turns out you don't.
Yeah.
Because the tumor is growing from the breast, from the estrogen that the tumor makes, not from what's in your system.
Mm.
So your systemic estrogen has almost no impact on the tumor. What's happened with the tumor is it's now a mutated tissue that is growing. It's making its own growth hormone, its own growth factors, its own vascular growth factors to make its own blood vessels, its own estrogens. So the tumor is a self-contained monster growing in her body, and it has nothing to do with the estrogen. The reason, well, I guess I should not say quite that. It has something to do with estrogen in a roundabout way, because it was probably the lack of estrogen in her body that triggered the mutation to start with.
Mm.
Because healthy breast tissue requires estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was growing up, and she's now 50 or 55 or 60 or 65 years old, her estrogen levels are very low. They're down by 50% by age 50, and then they keep dropping and dropping, and they're zero by 75. And so as the estrogen levels continue to drop, the incidence of breast cancer goes up and up and up. And the lower your estrogen level in your blood, the higher your risk of getting a breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So giving women estrogen to start with lowers the risk of getting breast cancer. But here's the interesting fact. A certain percentage of those women that we were given the estrogen because we thought they had no breast cancer have actually got one. It's somewhere in that 5 to 10 year period in which it's just too early to find the cancer.
Mm.
But even despite the fact that we are giving estrogens to women who have a hidden breast cancer we don't know about, the overall risk of breast cancer went down 25%.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a phenomenal study where when you catch a woman before she's into menopause and postmenopause, and in that 10-year window, you can actually lower the risk for breast cancer by 30% if she is on estrogen replacement. But it has to be bioidentical estrogens and not synthetic estrogens. And in the Women's Health Initiative study, it was actually the synthetic progestins that caused her breast cancer to begin with.
Right.
It was not estrogen.
Not the estrogen. The
right.
estrogen actually lowered the risk of breast cancer.
That's right.
Now, let's get back to the lady that we were talking to a few weeks ago. She has a breast cancer. If as I recall, it was a stage 1 mildly invasive tumor.
Okay.
It was small. They took it out. They found it on mammogram. And the oncologist wants to put her on an estrogen blocker. Now, given what we've just said, why would that be a good idea? Because what's causing the tumors to grow are estrogens produced by the tumor and not what's in the system. Our problem is we don't know how to turn off the estrogen just in the tumor.
Right.
Actually, Dr. Glaser may know.
Dr. Glaser does know. Yeah, I've sent her a lot of patients lately.
That's right. But generally, what we do is we give a woman something that turns off all the breasts, all of the estrogen, head to toe, including the tumor.
Yeah.
And so that turns off the growth in the tumor. And the reason we're doing that is, of course, they've already taken that tumor out.
Right.
But she may have already spread. She may have sent little daughter cells from the tumor around her body. So there could be little tiny foci of breast cancer in her bones, in her brain, in her lung, because these are the three most common places for it to spread to. Or, well, the contralateral breast, too. So those four places. But we don't know.
Yeah.
Because we don't know whether the tumors are there or not because they're too small for us to find.
Correct.
And so they're saying, well, just in case there's some of that that has already spread, we're going to turn off all of your estrogens, including the estrogen in those little daughter cells. We don't know if they're there or not.
Right.
Okay. And so I understand why they want to do it. And statistically, it does slow the period of time before any reoccurrence of a new breast cancer. So, you know, once you've already got a cancer and we've already treated it, then that is an option. The problem is that taking away all of a woman's estrogen makes her so miserable that an awful lot of women said, I'll take my chances because I simply don't want to live like that.
Right.
Because the total lack of estrogen causes such horrible problems.
Right. Dry skin, hair loss, memory loss.
Osteoporosis, fractures, or, you know, spine starts to collapse, and the depression and fatigue and anxiety we've already talked about.
Right.
So, you know, there is a rationale for the oncologist wanting to use an estrogen blocker in a woman that has been treated for a breast cancer. There is no rationale that I can conceive of that says a woman should not get estrogen if she doesn't yet have a breast cancer or we don't know about a breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Because all of the studies that we've done on that show that we lower the risk of breast cancer. We don't increase it by giving her estrogen. And even that 10-year that 10-year wall you talked about, if we give it to her within 10 years of menopause, then we can lower her risk of breast cancer about 30%. Why wouldn't we give it to her after that 10 years? Well, after 10 years, now her estrogen load is down by about 65, 70%. And if she's going to get a breast cancer, it's already happened. So we don't lower the risk of breast cancer anymore, but we do impact her brain, her skin, her heart,
her bones,
her joints, her mood,
GI, so many different things.
So why not give her the rest of the benefits, even if we can't lower her risk of breast cancer anymore? You know, we're not going to give her any more breast cancer. What we're only going to do is we aren't going to lower it as much.
Right.
But we can protect her for everything else.
Everything else. Exactly right. You know, it just goes to show that these sex hormones, quote unquote sex hormones, are not just sexuality hormones.
No.
They are not for reproduction. They're whole body phenomenon.
Yes.
And there's a lot of other functions. And that's the message that we want to get across to people, that estrogen is not, first of all, not just one hormone. It is a multiple complex of hormones that have multiple functions in the body in multiple organs. And therefore, dropping estrogen level for a particular reason is going to affect that woman's life in many other aspects of her life that make her whole.
Yeah, we call them sex hormones because we discover what they do in adolescence. And in adolescence, they prepare you for reproduction.
Right.
You know, they ripen up your uterus, they get your ovaries growing properly, the vagina changes so it's competent now to have intercourse, the guy, you know, his testicles drop, his penis enlarges, he gets ready to have sex. So in adolescence, they are, quote, sex hormones.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, they are total body preservation hormones.
I like that, preservation hormones.
they're there to keep you young and strong and vital.
They are indeed.
So the sex hormones are not just for sex, although the sex part is kind of fun too.
Here I used to say they're the foundation of what we do. Now you say they're preservation hormones. Okay.
Well, you know, maybe we can change the name. We are the Preservation Clinic. We will preserve you.
I did say that, you know, wellness is not by chance. Wellness is a choice.
Yes.
As you get older, you make choices.
That's right.
You make choices all the time, but wellness is a choice that is available to you now.
Yep. All right, we got to take another break. But then we'll come back, and next we're going to talk about andropause, the male version of menopause.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
Well, we've had an interesting discussion about hormones today. And I know that's an important one. And even though I keep thinking people must know this by now, I keep meeting people that have no clue. So it was very good to review estrogen and the impact of lack of these hormones in a menopausal woman, the impact of estrogen in postmenopause and its breast cancer relationship. And now, Dr. Mixon, let's talk a little bit about what happens to men. You know, women and men work together. We've learned from our Blue Zone studies and lots of others, that the relationships are important to maintain for health and wellness.
There are people that have a stable and congenial relationship, live longer and live happier lives.
They do.
Okay. So, you know, it's marriage is good for us.
It
if
is.
You're married to the right person.
If you, yes, in the right circumstance, to the right person. There's lots of if ands and buts.
If.
But let's assume that all the ifs are in place and you are with the right person and you are both aging together. Well, other than just, you know, the social, the financial, the family, there are health things that you can do for each other. And one of them is making sure that your man has his testosterone as much as he needs for function, not just for sexuality.
Right. But let me go back and put a wider view on that.
But, okay.
Men and women both go through a global hormonal decline with aging. And it starts in their early to mid-30s. Okay, we peaked all of our hormones when we were 18 to 20 years old. But somewhere in our late 20s to mid-30s, our hormone levels start to decline. And it's a slow decline at first. But the older you get, the faster the decline. And that decline is not just testosterone. And that's one of the things I try to get across to our guys and to other doctors I talk to. Giving a man testosterone is helping 1/6 mm-hmm. of the problem.
There we go.
Just like giving a woman only estrogen for menopause is helping 1/6 of the problem. In a man, DHEA is declining. Thyroid is declining. Pregnenolone is declining. Testosterone is declining. All of the same hormones that we went through with the women that are declining are also declining in a man. And the symptoms are virtually identical, except we are less likely to get hot flashes, but we'd certainly get mood swings.
Right. You know, it's an interesting concept, but men have estrogen.
We do.
And testosterone breaks down into estrogen.
Yes.
So a younger man carries more estrogen than an older man does.
Yes.
Because his testosterone level is low, therefore the conversion is low.
Right. Yeah, young men will make 2 and 3 times more estrogen than old men. And yet the old men get the man boobs.
Well, yeah, but the function of that hormone is for their brain, for bone,
right,
and actually even to lower their cholesterol levels.
You got it. Yes. So let's kind of go through the same litany with the men that we went through with the women.
Mm-hmm.
As your thyroid level is dropping down about 25% or so by 50, okay, you have weight gain because your metabolism is slowing down. The same amount of food that you burned and stayed lean in your 20s is now making you fat.
Yes.
Because the metabolism is dropping as the thyroid is dropping. You're getting mood swings. You're getting irritable at times. You get kind of moody. You can't understand why. You don't have the enthusiasm you used to have for things. And so the entire mental and physical milieu is slowing down as the thyroid is dropping.
Right.
Okay. You get less cold tolerance.
Yeah.
So you feel cold easier. You start wanting to put on your sweater in the evening because you're getting chilly. As your DHEA is dropping, erectile function starts to drop. Okay. DHEA is involved in erectile function. It's also involved in libido. So your desire for sex starts to wane a bit.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not just because you've been with her a long time.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
You're actually losing the hormones that told your brain it was time to reproduce. All right. So you're getting dry skin. You're getting colder. Your hair is thinning out. Your pregnenolone is dropping, which means you can make less testosterone.
That's right.
Okay. Your testosterone is dropping. And so, yes, you are having some erectile disorder problems, but you're also, your bones are not as strong as they used to be. Your muscles are getting weaker. Even though you keep working out, you don't have the strength you had in your 20s.
That's right.
You can't keep up with the kids. You can't run as fast or jump as high or lift as much.
Yep.
Because all of these hormones are declining.
That's right. Okay. Testosterone in men also affects their mood and their self-confidence.
And in fact, one of the things we learned from the propensity to give men hormone testosterone blockers when they have prostate cancer,
mm-hmm.
is that blocking a man's testosterone triples his risk of suicide.
Yeah.
300% increased risk of suicide because he's so miserable and depressed and unhappy when his testosterone is shut down completely. Now, a man going through andropause still has some testosterone.
Right.
But he's dropped a total testosterone from 1,200 at 18 to about 200, 250.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he has lost 80% of his testosterone. Just like the woman has lost 80% of hers, he's lost 80% of his.
Right.
So he's still higher than she is.
Right.
So he still wants sex more often than her.
Sure.
Okay, because her level started off at 75. His started off at 1,200. All right. When you start at 75 and you lose 80%.
Yeah.
Well, you're pretty puny.
Yeah.
Okay? You're about 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you start at 1,200 and you lose 80%, you're still at 200 plus.
So, you're still higher than hers.
That's right.
Hers at her peak.
Yes. But the point is that all six of the hormones we talked about with women earlier are also declining in men.
Yeah.
And all of the symptoms that she is getting, he is getting a male version of all those symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give him back just testosterone,
mm-hmm.
you are not going to really fix the problem. He'll be better.
Yes.
Because the testosterone was down 80%, you know. But again, one of my pet peeves, most doctors only give the guy enough to get him up to about 50% or so.
Well, or sometimes when they inject them, Jerry, they go super high, and
that's
then they
true.
Wait for that to come down over the course of time before they inject them again. That's so silly.
Yeah,
that's not even physiological.
No, now you've got the sawtooth every 2 weeks, up and down and up and down.
Yeah.
No, I would prefer to give the testosterone every day, wash it off every night.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I have to wash mine off before that because I get a phone call from my wife about 11 and said,
Can you come home at lunch? Stop.
I got to wash.
I get it. I mean, you know, we do understand that there are the ways of giving testosterone, for example, by injections, for example, via pellets, and transdermal is just one of the ways.
Yeah.
But it's the most physiological way of getting testosterone.
But the commercial, 5 milligrams per gram is not much of a dose.
Yeah.
If you're getting it through the regular pharmacy with a standard prescription,
sure.
you're getting a piddly amount. You are not going up to your youthful levels.
Yeah.
You know, the testosterone I put on every morning is 200 milligrams per cc
mm-hmm.
as opposed to 5 milligrams per cc.
Sure, and that's a huge difference. And that's why we say unless you measure, you really don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, you got to find what's in the blood.
Right.
2 hours after you put it on, you should be checking your blood level and see where it is.
Right.
And where I like to see a guy, I like to see that total testosterone, not up at the 1,200 level that it was when he was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
but I like to get it around 800 or so.
Sure.
You know, I want his free testosterone.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being down at 50 or 60,
mm-hmm.
should be up around 150,
right.
170.
Right.
You know, so that's our target range. But again, it's not just testosterone.
Exactly.
You also have to be measuring their thyroid, their DHEA, their pregnenolone, their progesterone, their estradiol, and their testosterone.
That's right. And with that, two things that we haven't mentioned at all today are insulin and cortisol levels. They're also part of this cascade, but they're also important, and they are the only two hormones that actually increase with age, and you don't want them to increase.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, yes. The human body is kind of fascinating, and we've got general rules for what happens. And generally, the hormones all decline except that couple. It's like as you age, your stem cells are declining.
Right.
You get fewer and fewer stem cells. They're less and less potent, except in belly fat. Fat is the only human tissue in which stem cells become more active with age.
Go figure.
Yeah, you got to wonder, was God serious when he designed this system?
Remember, in those times, food was not as readily available as it is today.
True.
And so the body is preparing for famine, right?
Yes.
Feast or famine. So in the summertime is feast time, in the wintertime is famine time, and you're preparing for when there isn't going to be available food, and so you have to use your reserves in your body.
That's right.
Right now, the problem is we have a lot of reserve.
No, our ancestors, you know, they ate a lot in the summer and fall. They gained every pound they could because in winter, there wasn't going to be much food available.
That's right.
They were going to get skinny. They were going to burn it all off. And our problem is summertime comes. Sure, let's eat. Let's have a barbecue. Give me some more of whatever it is. But then winter comes and we say, well, it's cold outside. I want something hot and sweet. Get me more hot chocolate and some marshmallows. You know, first my graham crackers. Yeah, and so we put it on in the summer and we put on more in the winter.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Which is far different from our ancestors.
We don't use up the resources. We lock the refrigerator and the freezer
we
with
should.
The fat.
We really should, yes. Can we start a new manufacturing company? We'll put not a padlock. We'll actually have a time lock on the fridge.
Yeah actually, that won't be a bad idea.
It'll open up an hour before breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
And
that's
it. That's it, yeah.
That's it. And it'll have a little display case and you can only take out so much food at each meal.
Well, you know, in Okinawa, Japan, that's what they did. They had this policy that you get up when you're 80% full. You don't eat to fullness. Uh-huh. You get up off the table when you have eaten so much and that should be all. And then that becomes a way of life.
Yes. Well, it works.
It did work. Now what they're saying is that the blue zones, especially in Okinawa, they're shrinking. The blue zones are shrinking everywhere. And in Okinawa, Japan, where it was, they weren't obese or overweight, they're now seeing the highest rate of obesity. And that's because of the influence of modernization. And that's just sad.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So andropause was good because every man experiences the same deficiency of hormones as his partner, his woman, does.
Yes.
But what happens is he experiences them more slower and later in life.
Yep.
But it does happen because you get the man that says, I used to be good, but now I don't have the desire to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what he's experiencing is a deficiency. And if you just help him at the foundational level and replace that deficiency, he will go back to his old self.
But you need to replace all of the things that are declining,
indeed,
not just testosterone, not just estrogen for women. You have to give them back everything that they're short of.
Yeah, give them back what they're missing, and also check how much they need, because there is no, everybody doesn't need the same amount.
No, they don't. And that's why we check our people every 3 months.
Yeah.
We redraw their blood and we check all of those hormones along with a lot of other stuff.
Right.
Just the hormones. It's every 3 months.
That's right. And then when the test results come, we give you specific instructions about how to apply the cream 2 hours before the blood test so we can measure peak levels.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the test results come back, you sit down with your doctor and they go over whether this is adequate or not. If they're overcorrected, are you experiencing side effects or not? And if you're not quite well corrected, what can they do to change that? How will they help improve absorption? Is it a technique issue? Is it a hormone issue? Is it a base issue? And so there's lots of thoughts that go into getting it right for you, and your doctor will work with you to find the right solution. But it takes time.
Yes.